Baby back door, baby fall off. Sipping codeine cause I gotta kill a cough. Let me sit sideways in the big bins. Oh, you boys, they my brothers, they my friends.
There's not one guy, one person in the history of this program that's bigger than the program.
Mayfield on play action. Kyler Murray knows that. Marquise Brown, touchdown.
20, 10, touchdown, Adrian Peterson.
You're listening to Brandon Drum and Parker Thune. This is the OU Insider Under the Visor podcast.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to another OU Insider and the Visors Tuners post-game podcast powered by Riverwind Casino. My name is Brandon Drum, here with Parker Thune, 34-24, Oklahoma. Season over. First round of the playoffs again. Rinse, wash, repeat. Only two teams in playoff history, Parker, has lost after being up 17-0.
The 2017 Sooners and the 2025
Sooners. Oklahoma holds that distinction all by themselves.
Not the type of history you want to be making.
No, no. But nonetheless, they made it. And here we are. Podcasting late at 2:30 in the morning because the post-game presser after that loss took 3 hours, it felt like. But not here to gripe, not here to gripe. I will gripe before this thing's over with about some of the crap that we saw tonight post-first quarter. But before we do all that, Parker, let's thank some sponsors.
Sure. Why not? Riverwind Casino, folks, is our presenting sponsor here on the Under the Visor podcast. It's been the OKC metro area's premier gaming destination for nearly two decades. Almost 3,000 electronic games, table games, bars, and dining options, plus the best live music in the metro. It's no surprise that Riverwind is always a good time. Thanks as well to our friends at Janet King, the greatest team to ever clean, and a proud partner of OU Athletics, delivering spotless results and solutions from stadiums to any size business across the country. Check out which of their solutions is best for you or your business by going to janiking.com. That's janiking.com. And finally, a word from Brunt Workwear. Folks, if in the holiday season you need to shop for the hardworking man in your life, or you are one of those hardworking men who doesn't really know what you want in the Christmas season, I know I struggle with this, certainly. Well, upgrade your wardrobe in the area of workwear, outdoor wear, by getting yourself a pair of Brunt's Marin work boots. Choosing work boots used to mean sacrificing comfort or durability. If they felt good, they didn't last, and if they lasted, they wrecked your feet. But Brunt built tough boots that feel great from day one. No break-in, no sore feet, because people out there doing the real work shouldn't have to choose between comfort and durability. So with temps dropping and the holidays coming up, skip the throwaway gifts in favor of something that's built to last, Brunt Workwear. And Brunt isn't just about work boots. They offer a full range of high-performance gear built for tough jobs. From heavy-duty work pants to weather-resistant jackets, Brunt designs durable, reliable workwear to keep you protected and productive in any condition. Our listeners get $10 off their entire order with code OUINSIDER at checkout. That's bruntworkwear.com and use code OUINSIDER. Order today and let them know you heard about them here on the show. Brandon, as we kind of close the book on the 2025 season, we can talk about the big picture later on in the podcast, but with regard to the game that was played earlier this evening at Owen Field, you know, I remarked this, I mentioned this in the rapid reaction video that we did on the YouTube channel, but I'll say it again here. Didn't really feel like it was one coach, one player, one play, one moment that cost Oklahoma the game tonight. It just wasn't good enough in any aspect of the football game. It wasn't good enough on offense, wasn't good enough on defense, wasn't good enough on special teams. And here we are, and Oklahoma's magical season has come to an untimely end.
Yeah, I the more I think about this game, the more frustrated I get about it, just because the special teams just is what I just want to bang my head up against the wall about, because it just doesn't make sense. You've been flawless with special teams all season. What? Why now? Why that game? And I know nobody can really answer that question, and it is what it is, but it's still weird. Like, you were flawless on special teams in the best special teams unit, arguably, in college football all season. Your punter and your kicker were all ACC.
Yep.
Your kicker was Lou Groza.
Yep.
And I didn't like a lot of the late game decisions. I was sitting there talking to Josh Pate in the end zone at the end of the game, and probably the last 7 minutes, he and I just sat there and had conversation throughout the whole fourth quarter. And we both were just baffled with some of the things that we saw. Game management, time management from Oklahoma. It was just odd. Like, it felt like Oklahoma should have been in a hurry and they weren't. Like, bros, you're down 10. You've got like 80 yards to go. There's like 6.5 minutes left. You might want to kick this crap in gear, because if you score, you're not tied up. You're not up. You need to let your defense get the ball back. And then about 5.5 minutes left, they started calling timeouts. And they used all their timeouts going into the 2 minute warning, which cost them.
It didn't cost them.
Well, no. Okay. Hear me out on this. You had to rush your kicker at the end because the clock was running, essentially, right? On that third down, right? They ran him out. You had to rush.
It wasn't a rush. It was the exact same amount of time he would
have
had.
Right, but he was in a hurry. You had to. The clock was about to restart, right?
What do you mean?
He was rushed a little bit more than he normally would have been. You're going to take your time. You're going to line it up. You had a little over a minute left at that point. You still had to get the onside kick if you made the field goal. If you had your three timeouts left, you could have kicked that field goal, kicked the ball, used your timeouts, and then maybe had – yeah, and I don't know how that plays out, right? I don't know the timing, because I'm not a wizard and I can't see how it all figured out. It just felt weird. I thought the timing of the timeouts felt weird. And I wasn't the only one. Cole Kublik was standing right next to them. They're all like, why are they calling timeouts?
Well, I mean, you're calling all your timeouts because you need two scores there. I mean, they were down by 10 points. So
correct, but if you're going to kick a field goal, 50, like, the field goal kick was weird as it is. Third down, why would you not try to get a little bit closer on third down before you kick that field goal?
Because that takes time. I mean, if you need two scores anyway, you have a kicker that hasn't missed from beyond 50 yards all year. Send him out there. Like, he's got a full 40-second play clock, and he did. He wasn't rushed. He had a full 40-second play clock to go out there.
The game clock's still going, though.
Well, I mean, of course, it's always going.
Okay, well, that's what I'm talking about.
Well, the game clock wasn't going. No, because they had just spiked the ball. The play clock.
Yeah, okay.
Game clock was not.
But they wasted. They wasted. Regardless, that the whole situation felt weird. We were just over there discussing it, and a lot of this stuff felt. I'm probably wrong. I mean, you can cut it. Like I said, we can nitpick on that all day. I just felt like it was a little odd. The timeouts were odd with 6 and 5 minutes left. And I wasn't the only one that thought that.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't have a problem with it because, again, you need two scores there anyway. But at that point, it was, I mean, regardless of when you call the timeouts, it's probably too little too late anyway. Where things got out of hand for Oklahoma was back in the second quarter. I mean, they led this game seven. They had led this game 17 to nothing, Brandon. 17 to nothing. It looked for a brief moment in time as though it was just going to be a crimson avalanche all night. They were outgaining Alabama 181 to 12. 181 to 12 in the yardage department. You're up 17 nothing on the scoreboard. And then poof, in the span of maybe 20 real life, real time minutes, that entire lead vanishes.
Yes. And I don't want to pinpoint one play, but I honestly felt like they score, right, to make it 17-7. Oklahoma has the ball. They're driving. It's third and four. Mateer rolls, comes back the other direction. Xavier Robinson's running wide open. Mateer also has, and there's people that are nitpicking on this too, saying, oh, well, he should have ran the ball. Okay, that's fine. And I said that.
I'm sorry. That's just stupid. Okay. I will be quite frank, a lot more frank than I usually am, and a lot more explicit than I usually am with regard to that, because that is stupid.
Yeah, it was a great pass.
To criticize John Mateer for the decision to make that throw on that play is asinine. You would have a case if he'd airmailed it over Xavier Robinson's head, or if he'd one-hopped it or thrown it behind him. That pass was right on the money.
It was.
John Mateer stepped up, and in that moment, he trusted his instinct and he trusted his own ability to be able to deliver a 40-yard strike on a dime downfield, and he hit Xavier Robinson in the hands. Of all the things you could be second-guessing about this football game, that is without question the dumbest.
I agree, because it, at the time, my instant reaction was, what do you do? Well, first off, when he started to run, and of course, I have the bird's eye view, right? So I see all that green pasture, and who knows what he saw? He probably saw all the green pasture, but he also sees the dudes in white running at him. So his instant reaction, like you said, was, I'm going to throw it. Dude's wide open. And he hit him right in the hands, and you won't find a bigger Xavier Robinson fan than me. But, dude, that might have been the biggest play of the ball game, even bigger than the pick six, because the pick six, you felt the life of the stadium completely go out.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. It completely sapped the energy in that building.
The drop pass was the initial just.
Well. And it felt like that
killed
was
everything.
That was kind of the here we go again moment, wasn't
yes.
it? Like, oh
yes.
Boy.
Yes.
Oh boy. And then of course on the very next play, Grayson Miller mishandles the snap on the punt and Bama takes over on the plus 30-yard line. And then immediately it's another eye roll, like, oh, this could get out of hand quickly. This could really start to snowball. And it did, man. And look, I will defend John Mateer to absolutely no end for his decision to try that throw to Xavier Robinson, because, again, he put it exactly where it needed to be.
Yep.
Hit him in both hands, and the dude didn't catch it. Literally all you can do as a quarterback is put the ball right there and trust that your guy is going to reel it in. Once the ball is out of your hands, the play is quite literally out of your hands. So I will defend John Mateer relentlessly for that play. Yeah. But the pick six, completely inexplicable.
Yeah.
And Ben Arbuckle tried to shoulder the blame for him in postgame. But, man, there's no earthly reason to throw that ball, because even if, and he explained there was a miscommunication, even if Keontez Lewis runs the right route there, even if he does break it off, Zabian Brown's still all over it. He's crashing down, anticipating that exact throw.
It's not going to be completed. I don't think it gets picked, but I think.
Oh, I think it's a pick six, regardless of whether or not Lewis runs the right route. I mean, he was all
body
over that.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I understand what they were doing because of how far he was playing off. He was only supposed to take like two steps and then turn and throw, or two steps and then turn and get the ball. I don't know what Keontez Lewis was doing running a go route when the dude's playing 12 yards off you. But that it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. At the end of the day, it is what it is. Like, you can, again, we can sit there and be, it's semantics at this point. It was a pick six regardless. Right now, it's a pick six, and the points went up on the board. And the miscommunication probably led to all that, but you're in the playoffs. Like, the miscommunication can't be doing it. My question is, Parker, why is Keontez Lewis out there in a big moment like that when he hasn't been playing like that all season? Like, those are the little things I'd think about. Like,
why is Keontez Lewis out there?
He hasn't played very much lately. Okay, at this point, I prefer Javonte Gibson. I prefer Jermichael Carter.
Jermichael Carter is going to be a big piece for this team next year.
And I prefer those two over Keontae at that point in the season. It's fair for me to think that, though, right?
It's fair for you to think that. I myself disagree because over the first four games of the season, until he got hurt, John Mateer's go-to guy wasn't Isaiah Satania. It was Keontae Lewis.
The way that
he played through those first four games, I think he earned every right to be on the field for those meaningful snaps, the snaps in those types of moments once he was fully healthy again.
Yeah, great. He's fully healthy, but he just had a better rapport with all those other receivers. And it's a playoffs. It's nut crunching time, man. You go with who you've played the majority of your season with at this point. That's like the Javonte Barnes thing. Like, Xavier Robinson's banged up and they still didn't go to Javonte Barnes. And Javonte Barnes, I watched him during warmups and I was like, holy crap, I think he may get some carries. That dude looks really good.
I tell you,
he didn't touch Phil.
On another note, tonight, thankfully, mercifully, we can close the book on the Jaden Nott experiment and thank the Lord that's over.
They need to go get
somebody. Maybe there's a side of that whole situation that I'm just not aware of. And if so, I'll be more than happy to retract anything negative I've ever said about the kid. But if I'm just going off what I can interpret with my own two eyes, there has not been a single time throughout this season in which it's appeared that Jaden Ott seriously cares about or values the opportunity to wear the crimson green. I mean, he jogged off the field during warmups today and went back to the locker room while the rest of the team was still warming up. Jaden Ott alone jogs off the field back to the locker room. And of course, I think it's pretty well known OU Twitter lore at this point what he was doing at the Alabama game when the rest of the team was celebrating. I should say the first Alabama game. That final horn sounds, the rest of the team is celebrating a massive upset victory in Bryant Denny Stadium. And Jaden Ott's doing, you know, he's not doing that. For those that don't know the story, I'll just leave it at that. He's not celebrating with the team. But man, what a waste of money that entire experience was. And you know, you don't really know until you try it, right? I don't think anybody had the inkling when they made the decision to bring Jaden Ott in back in April that it was going to be that catastrophic of an investment. But they got 68 yards out of Jaden Ott this year. 68 yards.
More so than
just the fact that he didn't produce, it never seemed like he cared.
That's what more than $500,000 gets you.
Never seemed like he cared. And for me, man,
the ROI on that was probably the worst in history, right?
Yeah. And maybe this is the Maybe this is the curmudgeon in me. Maybe this is the product of working with Mike Steele for almost 5 years now. But man, if you're not going to act like you care about the opportunity, be on your merry way.
Yeah, I they got to go find somebody. I'm really mincing words here.
I want to be a lot more severe.
Well, I know you do. I'm trying to move this before you.
I want to be a lot more severe about that whole ordeal. I'm just glad it's over. I'm really glad it's over.
So, do you feel confident in Jonathan Hatton, Xavier Robinson, and Torrey Blaylock next year? Because I don't know that I do. And I think all three are going to be really good players.
I think they should bring in a portal back.
Okay, thank you. Totally agree.
I think they should bring in a portal
back. Wouldn't Jaden Ball be a good one?
But he's going to Texas if he gets in the portal.
Yeah, he is. He is.
You need another back for the sake of depth, for the sake of competition, ideally, in my mind, an experienced guy that has produced. I think, you know, if you're giving me the choice between a G5 guy who's run wild, like, for instance, Caleb Hawkins versus, I don't know, some blue chip P4 kid who hasn't done much at the collegiate level.
You're taking Caleb Hawkins.
Give me the guy who's produced. And it doesn't
have to be. Has he gotten in the portal yet?
No, and it doesn't have to be Caleb Hawkins specifically. And I would imagine that if and when he does get in the portal, Oklahoma State's going to have a lot to say about that whole deal. But yeah, I think Oklahoma needs to grab a portal back.
Yeah, I totally agree. And they're going
to
get
They have to run the ball better. And Brent Venables said it after the game. They have to run the ball better, man. This team has been completely unable to get anything going on the ground since Eric Gray graduated. And that was a long time ago, Brandon. That was 2022. The last 3 years, Oklahoma's run game has been putrid. And that's not a referendum on the individuals they're in, because Xavier Robinson brings value to the table. Torrey Blaylock brings value to the table. There are some encouraging, exciting pieces in that backfield, and there are more coming in. But when you look at the body of work in 2025, Oklahoma averaged 3.7 yards per carry as a team. That is appalling. They ran the ball 33 times tonight for 55 yards. Again, that is appalling.
Bama was more appalling, but we're not even going to go there, because I think they had like 38 yards total or something to that extent. Mm-hmm. It was really, really bad.
And it takes two to tango in that sense. Not only do you have to have the pieces in the backfield, you got to have the pieces up front.
Yes.
The offensive line has to play well in order for the backs to truly thrive.
And they didn't start the game, by the way.
Man.
But they were dominating the line of scrimmage. Oh, my God. To start the game, like, Oklahoma was just shoving.
They came out hot.
And then I don't know what happened. Like, I don't think BV, Arbuckle, they were all asked. I don't think they could really pinpoint, like, exactly what happened. I don't think they could figure. I think the truth of the matter is that the youthfulness of OU's offensive line reared its head once
it
things
did.
Started. Well, yeah, once things went sideways just a bit, they just couldn't overcome.
And Kane Womack, to his credit, he got creative, man. Alabama was bringing a whole array of blitzes and simulated pressures and stunts. And, you know, they were creating intricate looks for those young offensive linemen who are still pretty inexperienced. I mean, Michael Fasusi, Eddie Pierre-Louis, Ryan Foje, all still have less than 10 starts under their belt at the collegiate level. Two of them are true freshmen. The third is a redshirt freshman. And it felt like Alabama kind of made it a point to challenge those guys. And they looked like freshmen in the second half.
They looked lost at times. And it was in the fourth quarter. And again, I'm standing there talking to Pate, and Cole Kubelik, and I can't remember what it was. I know it was a third down, probably 6 minutes left to go. And Oklahoma's within, I believe they're close to field goal range, Parker, at that point. And they bring a blitz. And it was the play right before they punted and the holding on Bama happened, or the block in the back or whatever it was called, took place late in the fourth quarter. And Xavier Robinson, instead of taking the backer that was coming up the middle,
mm-hmm.
took the outside edge or went to the outside edge, didn't totally – the protection wasn't – and then Fabecchi – like, has to get off his guy or whoever he's comboing with. And he's, like, reaching, trying just to stop it. But by the time that happens, Mateer's just getting clocked. And, you know, those are the type of things that happened five times tonight, five sacks for yeah. Alabama. When was the last time Oklahoma gave up five sacks in a game? It had to have been last year, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, you know, especially I would say after halftime, felt like Alabama kind of just resolved to blitz the hell out of John Mateer. And, you know, however he responds, we'll live with it. Kind of seemed to be the mentality. And they got home a lot.
I think this offseason, his sole goal, or his top goal outside of his footwork, should be learning how to read defenses. I'm being nice when I say that. Like, I'm so tired of hearing his eyes aren't in the right spot. Well, you know what? Put your eyes in the right spot is knowing where the hell you want to go with the ball, because you can read the damn defense. You read the defense, your eyes in the right spot. But I think he kind of guesses. And if any, he took the blame on the pick six, so I'm going to throw the blame on him. It was zero coverage. They were playing off, way off, because of down and distance and the time that was remaining in the quarter at the time. Right? I think it was a little over two minutes left, right? How you didn't see that it was zero when there was no safety, I don't know. Like, everybody was manned up, essentially. But see, those are the little things, Parker. And it wasn't so little when it's pick six. But we heard again tonight, his eyes weren't in the right spot at times. That's the go-to phrase, right? Eyes aren't in the right spot. But if you read a defense, aren't your eyes in the right spot? Because there would be times, and I know you know what I'm talking about here, they're running mesh, right? How long was the mesh routes wide open before he would throw to them? They're almost to the sideline by the time he realizes that they're open. You're like, bro, they've been open half the freaking field.
Yeah.
And now you're seeing it. It's too late.
It feels like everything that isn't pre-programmed and or telegraphed happens way too slow.
Yeah, you can tell what's tagged and what's not for him. Like, this is where you're going. It's tagged. This is one. This is two. Uh-huh.
Man. And this is going to be, I think, the biggest conversation point in the offseason is, can you go any higher with John Mateer in 2026? Can you win a college football playoff game? Can you build upon what you've done in 2025 and take it a step further? And I truly don't know the answer, Brandon. The jury is very much out on John Mateer. Because he has shown me enough to make me think Oklahoma can win with him.
Yeah. Yeah.
He has also shown me enough to make some part of me think this might be Oklahoma's biggest limiting factor in 2026.
Oh, okay. So set it on the rapid reaction. So I'm going to kind of piggyback off that. Everybody improves, right? In the offseason, notoriously, generally, most people improve, right? You have to hope that the jump from G4, here's what you got to hope for. What were the stats for Joe Burrow the year before he had his greatest season?
Oh, no. Don't do this to him.
No. I'm not. I'm trying to make an improvement analogy here. I'm not. At any, I want to make this very clear. I am not comparing him to Joe Burrow. Just so we're clear, I'm trying to make an improvement analogy. Joe Burrow was not great his first season at LSU. If you have the stats, please help me out here because they were
58% completion rate.
Thank you.
16 touchdowns to 5 interceptions.
Okay, thank you. 58 completion percentage. That is just not great.
And then, of course, the next year, 76% completion rate, 5,671 okay. passing yards.
That is not
60 touchdowns.
That's not, by no means am I going there. But if he can show marked improvement from this season to next, right? If he can show, I think he was he 11 for 11? Is he 11 touchdowns or was he 12 and 11 this year? Mateer's final stats.
Offhand, I don't know. Obviously, I know it's somewhere in that neighborhood. I don't know the exact
I number. Used 12 and 11.
We had, yeah.
He
so
threw
he,
two touchdowns today,
he,
right?
He wound up with 14 touchdown passes okay. and 11 interceptions.
Okay, 14 and 11. Okay. 14 and 11. If he can get in the range of 25 and 8, I think you can. And I think he can do that. I honestly do. I like I said, if he can footwork in his eyes, if he can learn how to read defense, if he can get his footwork better, I don't think you're changing his throwing motion. I think that's who he is. He's from the ear mater. That's what everybody donned him. That's what he is. He pushes the ball from his ear. He doesn't really throw it. And that's also part of his problem, but you're not going to fix that part. That's who he is. Pushing the ball is aiming it. And a lot of times when you aim it, you're going to go high. And he misses high all the time. So there you go. But he's from the ear mater. That's who he is. But if you can get 25 and 8 out of him next year, and I think that's – is that I don't think that's asking too much in year three in this offense as a starter.
It shouldn't be.
It's year four total, year three. Mm-hmm. It's the second year with everybody else. I would imagine you're going to have an improved wide receiver unit just because, one, guys are coming back. If you can keep Satania, Elijah Thomas steps up, who everybody has high hopes for and thinks is going to be a superstar. You pick up two receivers, one being an elite guy and another being a guy that can be a potential game changer for you out of the portal. I think you can have a huge jump. Also, getting a good tight end. Canick's great, but you need a tight end that's going to be able to run block. And I think a lot of times people just don't – they're not worried about OU's run game because you're kind of down a blocker when OU's tight ends are out there right now because they're not great blockers. If you can get a guy that can do both out of the portal or two, and I think Oklahoma's going to get that, just so we're clear, I think you see a big improvement. The freshmen are going to improve, Parker. The offensive line's going to improve. He's going to have more confidence. He's not going to feel rushed. Prime example, play one today, very first play of the game. What did you notice? Did you notice anything? Just there's going to be people in the comments right now. Isaiah Satania was wide freaking open. Running a kind of a fake mesh and he like, or kind of a fake, I don't know, over route. And then he boated up the field right between the hashes. Nobody was there. Mateer holds onto the ball one half a second longer and doesn't rush that throw. Touchdown.
Yeah.
But he didn't see him because he rushed it.
I'll tell you, man. I thought Ben Arbuckle called a hell of a game tonight.
Thank you. He was in his bag tonight. Yep.
And I, honestly, the more I just kind of digest everything that's happened this season and the more I study the film, I think Ben Arbuckle's a really good play caller. Like, I don't think Oklahoma's given anything up to the opponent in that department.
No.
I think Ben Arbuckle is a dang good play caller. Unfortunately, he and his scheme right now are kind of limited by the quarterback.
And the O-line. Yeah.
And the O-line, sure.
Yeah.
But I if we're power ranking the problems that Oklahoma has, turning the page from 2025 to 2026, Ben Arbuckle isn't even on the radar for me.
Correct.
I don't think that dude is an iota of the problem.
The thing you got to worry about now is I don't think you're going to lose a lot on the offensive side of the ball. They're going to return a lot of guys. You're going to get your three freshmen back. Your Jake Michael is going to be healthy, so you're going to get your center back. So you're going to have four. If you can bring in a guy that is really good at guard, you'd spend money, like $600,000 type money on a guard. You might have the best offensive line in college football next year by the end of the season. Now, they've got to improve, right? Things have to work in your favor health-wise and all that type of stuff.
And I think I would just settle for a good offensive line.
Yeah.
If Oklahoma has a good offensive line next year, that works.
Yeah, that works great,
too.
I
don't think they'll have the best offensive line in college football. But I think they can have a good one.
Right. I said could. Didn't say the would. Could have the best offensive line just because of who they have coming back, the youthfulness. I think 2027, they will have the best offensive line in college football if all three of those guys are back with whatever the hell else they have added onto them. Here's the other thing, and we haven't talked about this. R. Mason Thomas, gone.
Yep.
Marvin Jones Jr., gone.
Yep.
I'm just going to sit here and say, I think Kip Lewis is gone.
See, that is interesting to me, and here's why.
I'll just say after the game today, I talked to somebody, and they said, unfortunately, they think he's gone.
And yeah. Well, and you know, I brought it up in our post-game podcast after LSU. He looked like a guy that was taking it all in for the last time with the senior day festivities. It doesn't surprise me, but I still find it interesting, and here's why.
Okay.
If I am looking at this as an unbiased outside observer, and I'm just trying to put myself in the shoes of the two guys that face serious business decisions here in Kip Lewis and Isaiah Cetania, as to whether they're going to stay or whether they're going to make the jump to the NFL. If I'm just looking out for my own interests here, I think I'm going to the NFL if I'm Cetania, because I'm really not sure how much higher my draft stock is going to get. I'm not really sure what good another year at Oklahoma will do a guy like me. But if I'm Kip Lewis, I come back, man. Because I think I'm probably taking a cue, honestly, from Brian Asamoah. Brian Asamoah decided to forego his last year of eligibility to enter the draft after the 2021 season. And he might have, I think it was a third round pick, but man, did not set him up well for enduring success in the league.
Yeah.
And I think Kip Lewis is kind of in a similar spot, man, where he could use another year of seasoning. He could use another year of tape. Maybe it doesn't drastically improve his draft stock necessarily as far as where he gets selected. But I think another season at the collegiate level in Brent Venables' scheme especially can much better prepare him to not only get to the NFL, but to stick in the NFL.
Okay. Yeah,
that's how I see it with those two. I'd go if I'm Satania. I'd stay if I'm Lewis.
And the funny thing is the
it's probably going to be
the opposite. Yeah. Yep.
The exact opposite.
And you're probably right, though. I mean, and I've heard other people say exactly what you've said, particularly people from inside the Swiss Center. They're like, yeah, I mean, it just makes sense for Kip to come back, add a little bit more weight, get a little bit more, show we can do a little bit more in the run game. He's great in the pass, great blitzer. He's great playing in space. The other thing is Kobe McKenzie could be gone too. Like I think people are overlooking that. Yeah, he's a junior, but there's something there. I don't know what it is, Parker, but there's something there. And I've talked to people around him, and they're not even definitive on how that's going to end up. The best interest for Kobe in the long term, and I know the people around him think this exact same thing, so I'm just throwing this out there. Come back. Because one, your wife is already known. She lives in Sooner Lure. She's been a coach for the softball team. You can go no wrong with the university. If you do the same and you finish it out, and let's say next year you have a career year once again and you actually win a playoff game, the two of you can do whatever you want the rest of your life, and almost without question, you're set because of who you are and what you did for the University of Oklahoma athletics. You're going to be paid for. And what I mean by that is people are going to ask you to come do kiss the babies, and they're going to pay you to come kiss the babies the rest of your life. You're going to be essentially be up in the stratosphere of Brian Bosworth and all those other things because of like Kinzie Hansen, Kobe McKenzie. Like, that is like the power couple of OU athletics, right? Jada Coleman, Billy Bowman. Those are the two power couples, right, in OU athletics. And there's a lot of people around them that believe that same thing. Like, dude, go back. Mm-hmm. Make sure you solidify your lore and never have to worry about anything the rest of your life.
Well, and I also just think, Oklahoma may
for
need
For NFL Kobe. Aspects, it needs it too, though.
Oklahoma may need Kobe next year because – Owen Heineke did not sound too optimistic tonight when he was talking about his appeal case with the NCAA for an additional year of eligibility. And so if they don't get Owen Heineke back, man, and let's assume for the sake of the hypothetical here that Kip Lewis does leave for the NFL, you're potentially looking at a world where it's the Kobe McKenzie, Samuel Masigo, James Nesta show next year at those inside linebacker spots.
Mm-hmm. A leader like Kobe would help out, right?
And especially somebody that's like that has grown up in that defense.
Yes. Yeah. So the Heineke thing, when I asked that question, dude, I honestly thought he was just going to say, yeah, man, I got the Senior Bowl invite. I love my time here. I that's what I thought was about to happen. I want to come back.
I tell you, man, I think a lot of it's going to depend on how he tests, but he's played his way into the draft conversation.
Like, of course, Senior Bowl.
Owen Heineke is a draftable player at the next level.
He's a good player. I think he's going to be a star. If you're Brent Venables, if you're the University of Oklahoma, you beg to have him back. You beg. You go try to bribe the NCAA to have him back. And I think his answer was eloquent. I thought it was great. I thought it showed a lot of humanity in it. I thought what he said to me was, and for those that missed it, just paraphrasing, was, I want to come back. Mm-hmm. I haven't made my decision, but, you know, he said the decision's been made for him at this point where he can't come back unless the appeals process works in his favor. And he says, I don't think it's going to, right now, it's the likelihood isn't great that's going to work in my favor. He said, but I hope that they don't throw me in the pile with just everybody else that asked for that extra season. And they see my case, they understand where I'm coming from, and that I'm not all about NIL, and that I'm coming back because I love the university and I want to play football here and finish my career out here the way that I want to finish it out, not because of my eligibility is over with, because he started with lacrosse.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was awesome. I thought there was a heart in that answer, and you cheer for that. Like, bad, you cheer for that. Bad. I've gotten to really, really like Owen Heineke as far as, like, interview-wise. He's a great interview. And he's an even better player and a better person. So you really, really, if you're a Sooners fan, you won. If you can return Kobe McKenzie and Owen Heineke and say you lose Kip Lewis, which we all think that's probably what's going to happen, and you have James Nesta out there, everything we've heard about James Nesta.
Yeah, they like a little 47.
You might have a hell of a linebacker core once again. It's going to be hard to replace old number 10. But, man.
I tell you, man, going into this campaign, we all knew this team had some alphas. And guys like R. Mason Thomas and obviously Kip, the Bowen brothers, etc., Burks and Satania. But the two guys this season that I think, I don't think it's much of a dispute, I don't think it's much of an argument at this point, the two guys that blew expectations out of the water beyond what anybody could have imagined, and really endeared themselves to this fan base in an enduring fashion.
I know you're insane.
Owen Heineke and Taylor Wine, man.
Yeah, easy. Studs.
Those dudes, they've been so fun to watch this season, because it's like week after week is just additional validation that, man, like, these are seriously talented, like, really, really good football players. These are not just guys who are kind of coasting on the good fortune of circumstances kind of working in their favor and opportunities presenting themselves for a few games in a row. Like, we've seen players get hot over the span of 2, 3, 4 games at a time, and then it kind of fizzles out. But, man, these are dudes in Heineke and Wine that played outstanding football start to finish for Oklahoma. And if Heineke does get the chance to come back next year, we know Wine will be back next year. Those are two guys you can build around. Those are two cornerstones on the defensive side of the ball that would go a long way towards just helping to offset the losses of, well, certainly R. Mason Thomas and potentially Kip Lewis.
So knowing what we know, or, okay, let's just, worst case scenario, Kip Lewis, R. Mason Thomas gone, Marvin Jones Jr. gone. I'm going to say Kobe returned because there's something in me feels like he's going to return. I think at the end of the day, the money probably has to be right for him to want to return and not try to test the NFL. But, and I think if you're Oklahoma, you make that right. How much of a drop-off do you think there is from this year to next year? And I say that because I think Taylor Wine's going to be preseason All-SEC. I think David Stone, Jaden Jackson, all three of them preseason All-SEC. I think you have Danny Okoye on the other end, which we haven't really got to see a whole hell of a lot of Danny Okoye. What we have seen of him at times has been absolutely special. He just hasn't gotten enough reps for anybody to get out there and have a really good, solid feel for who he is as a player just yet. You got Nesta, McKenzie in this scenario. Do you get Heinicke back in this scenario? I don't know. I'll just say no, because you're going to have a transfer, probably a linebacker, come in at that point. Right? I think they go grab a transfer linebacker. Don't know who that is. At one point, I thought it might be Kamari House, but talking to people within the program, I don't know about that. I'll just say that at this point.
I think the linebacker they end up with is not yet in the transfer portal.
I think you're correct. I wasn't going to go there, but...
okay, it's time for me to pump some sunshine, Brandon.
Go for it. But no, what do you think of next year? Okay, is that what you're going to with? You know, next, do you think they're going to be better?
I think the defense will be better.
Secondary is going to be awesome.
I think the defense will be better next year than they were this year. And the bar is very high, right? Mm-hmm. But when you break it down to the individual particles, if you will, and consider that you are bringing back Taylor Wine and Jaden Jackson and David Stone and P.J. Adibawere and Danny Okoye up front, all those guys. When you consider the fact that you're going to have some returners and some exciting new talent at those linebacker spots, I think there's a good mix there, and there might be a big-time transfer addition that you can throw in the mix. Like, there's a lot to get excited about with that group. And then the secondary, man. Yes, you lose Robert Spears Jennings. But the program thinks so, so, so highly of Michael Boganowski.
Oh, yeah.
And he's shown such exciting flashes that gets me juice to see what he's going to look like in a full-time starting role. Cortland Guillory and Eli Bowen are going to be a year older, a year sharper, a year wiser. And you're going to have the senior version of Peyton Bowen back at that other safety spot. Like, really the wild card for me is, how ready is Reggie Powers going to be to step into what I believe will be the starting cheetah role that Kendall Daniels vacates? And look, I'm holding a lot of Reggie Powers stock. So I'm a big believer in RP3 there at that spot. Mm-hmm. So to me, all of the pieces are there for Oklahoma to be just as good and perhaps better because of the caliber of athletes that are getting ready to step into some of those roles that are going to be vacated. I think they absolutely can be even better on defense next year than they were this year. We know the play caller ain't changing. We know it's going to be... We know it's still going to be that same chaotic Brent Venables scheme.
Mm-hmm.
We know it's going to be the same brain at the center of all of it. The same thumbs on the joysticks, if you will. And so I think that defense is going to be a force to be reckoned with next season. And we talked about it in the rapid reaction. Part of what that means, and part of what it means just to have been to the college football playoff here in 2025, is that you're going to enter 2026 with some lofty expectations, higher expectations than you've ever faced preseason in the Brent Venables era. And so much of Oklahoma's, what's the word I'm looking for? It's 3 a.m. So much of Oklahoma's outlook in 2026, and whether or not they live up to those expectations is going to be dictated by the offense and how well does John Mateer perform and how much growth is there in the run game and how much more does that offensive line gel with what we would expect would be four returning starters in Mikala, EPL, Fasusi, and Foje. And so that's really what it comes down to for me, looking ahead to next season. We'll see where things land once the portal pieces all fall into place.
Mm-hmm.
But looking ahead to 2026, mm-hmm. man, I love how it shapes up for Oklahoma on the defensive side of the football. It really is all about how much growth there is over the course of the offseason on the offensive side of the ball. And there's not a single position group in my mind that's exempt from that. There needs to be growth all around in every position group, in every area.
Yeah, I think the defense, the secondary is talked about, has a chance to be just special next year. The defensive line's going to be really good. They're going to have to add some pieces. I don't think they go grab an edge rusher. There was a time, I know that it was talked about. I think Oklahoma feels really good about their edge rushers next year, and they're just going to stay pat from what I'm understanding at this point. I do think they grab a defensive tackle or two out of the portal just because they're so young behind Marcus Strong. They're going to have Trent Wilson next year. You're going to have Nigel Smith next year. Like, you're going to have guys they feel like are going to be able to contribute, right? Highly ranked guys out of high school. But the experience behind those three is minimal. So you need to go grab at least some good depth pieces that are going to be able to come in and be good players. But I like that. I like the defense next year. I think if you're not looking at it the way that we just broke it down, you might think that there may be a little bit of a drop off. But if you understand how Brent Venables and his staff has developed those guys coming up, this is going to be a lot like, fans, I'm just going to let you know, you remember how Clemson was good every year? It didn't matter who they lost on defense. It's exactly what's about to happen, just so y'all are aware. Like, that is exactly what's taking place because the attrition is so small on the defensive side of the ball. And you're starting to get that same thing on offense, Parker. The attrition is starting to get smaller and smaller and smaller on offense. And the fact you have the same guy coming back in Ben Arbuckle, I know some fans are upset about that, and they're like, he needs to be gone. No. Let him get his dudes in there. See what happens when you get 2 and 3 years of his philosophy, of his scheme, as he continues to build. Remember, he's only 29 years old. As he grows, that offense grows with him. The youthful offense that it is grows with him. You guys might just end up with something special. Just saying. Lastly, does Tate Sandell return? Do we feel like he's going to return?
What I have been told by multiple folks within the program is that there is one player with whom Oklahoma is willing to be particularly flexible in their negotiations from a financial standpoint. A guy that basically has more power than anybody else in that locker room to dictate his value. And that is Tate Sandell, because Oklahoma understands that a large portion of the reason why they got to where they got tonight, i.e. hosting a first-round college football playoff game, is because they had the best kicker in America. And that matters, man.
Mm-hmm.
And we've witnessed this all throughout the season. To have watched OU lose as many games as they lost over the last few years, in no small part due to kicking woes, and then to just basically not have to worry at all about whether or not the ball was going through the uprights all season long with Tate Sandell. That stability, man, it's like having a great insurance policy with a company that you trust. Like, there's just a peace of mind that comes with having the best kicker in the country that can bail your offense out if they stall in what most programs would consider no man's land. I mean, he missed that 51-yarder at the end of the game. But outside of that, he was 8 for 8 this season on attempts of beyond 50 yards. All told, 8 for 9. That is, he tied an NCAA record tonight.
43 years old.
Plus yard field goals in a season. So, yeah, I think Tate Sandell comes back, and I think Oklahoma is going to compensate him more than fairly for his decision to return.
So what you're saying is he's probably going to be the highest paid kicker in all college football.
I don't think it's a question he's going to be the highest paid kicker in college football.
Good for him.
Find me Good a kicker who means more to their program than Tate Sandell does to Oklahoma. He got the loudest ovation tonight when they announced starting lineups. Did you catch that?
I did.
They didn't roar that loudly for anybody. Not R. Mason Thomas, not John Mateer, not Isaiah Satania. The guy the crowd cheered the loudest for was Tate Sandell.
Yeah. Good for him. He's
kind of a wild campaign, isn't it? Like, miss your first kick, make the next 23, and then miss the last two.
But you know what?
It's the way the cookie crumbles.
Yeah, and everybody's got – he avoided the bad game all season. His just came at an unfortunate spot.
I didn't have a great vantage point for that first kick that he missed, but there was plenty of controversy on Twitter.com as to whether that was actually a successful field goal attempt because it went over the upright.
Correct. So crazy. So Josh Pate, we're talking about that. And he said, and I quote, "Think about it like this, Drum. If the upright reached all the way up to heaven, that's kind of how the plane you have to look at it in when you're thinking about it. Would that go in?" And I said, "Well, it depends on how it bounced off the upright." He said, "But it has bounced off the upright." Yeah, he goes, "So they're going to count it as a miss." And that's how it was explained to me. So be that as it may, it makes sense, by the way. You have to view it in that aspect. So whatever. He's still an awesome kicker. I hope he still has the same confidence and bravado that he did this season next year, because it was fun to watch, really fun to watch. It was a blessing to be able to see in person every week. I loved it.
Talking a little mess to the couple of those Alabama players after he hit that 51-yarder in the second quarter.
Good for him. Good for him. When he deserves to do that. They probably said something. There was for those that don't know, after the game.
I guess it was the first quarter when he made that.
Yeah, it was the first quarter.
First quarter.
But for those that don't know, after the game, there was a scuffle between Alabama and Oklahoma.
A skirmish, you might say.
Skirmish. Alabama players were being a little bit testy and talking a lot of junk afterwards. They let what the Alabama media built up in their head of what really didn't take place.
Well,
and it is what it is.
You know who they were talking most of that smack to was Courtland Guillory.
Oh yeah, I saw. Yeah.
Because he was the one spit that was captured on video spitting in the direction of the Alabama logo. So only natural that was going to happen. You know, Elijah Thomas was right there in the thick of it, sticking up for his guy, which you love to see. But I mean, what went for Alabama last month goes for Oklahoma this time around, which is, you know, you don't want the opponent talking smack. Don't let them beat you in your building.
Correct. And you want to know what? Alabama, they can play this high and mighty, moralistic, whatever, all they want. They walked around, even their support staff, everybody with roses in their mouth, all in this thing, better than the Sooners or whatever newspaper thing. And they were taking photos with it and doing all that. The same crap that they got upset about Oklahoma, they did the exact same thing. So I don't want to hear it. Like, it's college football. Shut up. You beat them, you won. You can do what you want, and nobody's going to care. I think that needs to be the underlying theme. You won. Go gloat. Go have fun with it. And you did. But don't be pissy when somebody else does it. And Oklahoma wasn't pissy about it. They're like, good, you won. You can do what you want. Mm-hmm. Just do what you want. So, anyways. All right. MVP on offense, MVP on defense. I'll go real quick. I'll say I'm going to take the low-hanging fruit on offense and say Deion Burks.
Great game for Deion Burks.
Amazing game. Good for him. 104 yards last game, but it was 104 yards of
107.
Of big plays in big moments that needed to happen. And so I'll go there with that. And defensively, that's a tough one. I thought this person had a few mishaps tonight. But overall, once again, you know what? I'm not even going to go with that person. I'm just going to say Owen Heineke.
Okay. How about this? Because, How about this? Season MVP on either side of the ball.
Okay. Isaiah Satania on offense and defense. Taylor Wine.
I'd agree.
Yeah.
I'd agree.
Owen Heineke would be my second. But crazy. The two lowest rated guys. Again, can we talk about development? You stick around, you develop. That's such a lost art in college football. But that's what makes the teams. The teams that have the guys that have the most time at their college or in the program that they're at, those are usually the teams that win the most. Still to this day, it is a never-ending. It was the same before the transfer portal, but magnified now.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a question. There was a multiple questions about that in the post game. Like, hey, you guys are developing.
Yeah.
Do you feel good about the future? And yes, they do. So, Oklahoma is doing it the grassroots way, and we'll see how it goes next year. But nonetheless, all right, Oklahoma lost 24-34. The season's over. Great year. Surpassed all expectations. Can't hate on it. Hope OU fans enjoyed it. We enjoyed covering it for you guys. Can't wait. We've got a lot of stuff coming up for you guys over on OUinsider.com. Not just post-game coverage, but transfer portal stuff is about to kick off and kick off. There's a lot of notes over there right now. On OUinsider.com, I dropped 3 transfer portal notes in the last 24 hours, just so you know, on targets that Oklahoma is pushing for and a few that people thought they were, but they're not. You can go over there right now and check it out over on OUinsider.com VIP. Just type in OUinsider.com in your URL and join now right now for 50% off. So you can get OU Insiders normally $119.99 for $59.99. It's a great deal. That's going to end because it's a college football playoff sell for those that are in the college football playoffs. So I believe after this weekend, OU is not going to be in. That sell is going to end. So if you don't sign up before Sunday, you're not going to get it. Or before midnight on Sunday, I don't think you're going to get it. So make sure you go over to OUinsider.com, click that Join Now button, and sign up now. Plus, you get The Athletic for a whole year complimentary on OU Insider and on 3. So that's a 2-for-1 deal for half off right now. So just throwing that out there to you guys. Give us a try. Transfer portal. We got Parker and I are going to be down at the Navy Combine, All-American Combine, covering that. Lots of OU targets and commits will be participating down there. Lots of players that will be future players for Oklahoma will be competing in the Combine. Future players will be competing in the All-American game as well. We will have all that cover for you guys, head to toe. Can't wait to do that. Plus, like I said, basketball, softball, transfer portal. Spring ball is right around the corner. Literally, it's just crazy. 3 months away, spring ball will be here like that, and we will have that covered for you as well. So make sure you go over there to OUinsider.com and sign up. Hit that subscribe button. Hit that like. Hit that 5 stars. Hit that hype button on whatever podcasting platform you're listening to us on or watching us on. But that's going to do it for this version of the OU Insider Under the Visors Tuners Postgame Podcast. Ending, wrapping up the 25 edition for OU football. Team 131 in the books for Parker Thune. My name is Brandon Drum. You guys have a blessed night.